Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. Right now, your donation to support Assure's life-saving work can go even farther. Some donors have challenged us to raise $500,000, and if we do it, they will give us an additional $120,000. But we only receive the $120,000 if we raise $500,000 by June 13th. Last year, we served over 1,600 women, many at high risk for abortion. With your help, we can reach even more. Be part of this life-saving work. Go to firststeptolife.com/bot and give now. That's firststeptolife.com/bot.
Welcome to Life Matters, a show where we have open conversations about life issues, equipping Christians to engage in the pro-life movement. I'm your host, Tony Clark, the Executive Director of Assure Women's Center, and today we have a very special guest, Reggie Johnson. Reggie is a passionate advocate for life and has served as volunteer at Assure Women's Center. Reggie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks for having me.
So, Reggie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I was born to Fanny and Marcus Johnson. I was one of six siblings. Unfortunately, two have passed, which makes me the default oldest child. I have five grandchildren. I have two children. My daughter lives here in Papillion, and my son lives in Kansas with three of my grandchildren and my daughter with two of my grandchildren.
Okay, cool. So since this is a radio program, our listeners may not know that we are both African-American. We have had conversations in the past about how abortion, disproportionately affects the African-American community. In 2021, in states that report ethnic data on abortion to the CDC, 42% of all women who had abortions were Black. For Black women, there were 498 abortions per 1,000 live births. And of course, we don't make up 42% of the population. Can you share your thoughts on this?
Yeah, and I think the optimal word there is disproportionate. And not only is it disproportionate in terms of how it affects our community, it's also disproportionate how our community is apathetic about it. They don't necessarily take it very seriously. Not only that, the white community, if you will, or other ethnic groups, they are more serious about it than we are.
Yeah.
And so while I'm grateful for that, I'm pretty discouraged about the fact that we just don't take that very seriously.
Yeah. You know, I've had conversations about when I became pro-life. And one of the things I often say is that we didn't necessarily talk about life issues growing up. I didn't know the term pro-life probably until I started working for Assure. It just wasn't, not that we weren't pro-life, we just didn't talk about it, you know? I mean, we had the examples of, you know, keep your skirt down, keep your legs closed, but there was never talk about life starting at conception. And so I think I would agree with you on that in the Black community. It's just not something that we talk about very often.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly wasn't something that we talked about either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, abortion doesn't just affect women. For every baby that is aborted, there's a man who has lost a child. For the most part, the voices of these men aren't heard. The Free Press had a recent article called The Men Who Lost Their Babies, and there were a few quotes that stood out to me. The first one was from a man who said, "It's not my body. I understand that, but it's part of me." And then the author of the article also said that a man might actually feel a profound emotional connection to his unborn baby as it lives or dies inside someone else's body is not a truth we're especially comfortable with. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Given my history and specifically what we just spoke about, again, something we hadn't talked about. And so I don't believe that I have had the concern that I have about it right now. When I was growing up, there was no concern. Indeed, we may talk about this later, but indeed, I didn't care about it. It was not spoken of. And so the passion that I have for it now is because I was educated about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the passion I have for it now is also would lead hopefully to maybe helping others who at my age and at that time could recognize, hey, this is an issue we need to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. There are millions of men who have lost babies to abortion, but most of them stay silent. I know that abortion has personally affected you, and this is not something that you shared publicly. Are you comfortable sharing how abortion has touched your life?
Well, no, I am. quite frankly, this is something that not many people know about me, but I think it's important for folks to know, particularly as it pertains to my concern about this issue now. I say that I have two children, but in all actuality, I have four. In my youth and indiscretion, I did impregnate a young girl and a young lady, I should say. And during that time, I remember telling her, this even hurts to say right now, telling her to get an abortion, caring nothing about it. Then I, in my, I'd say around 18 or 19, another woman was impregnated by me. And I didn't tell her to get an abortion. And indeed, if she would have had the baby, quite frankly, what would I have done, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would hope that I would have taken care of the child, but I didn't tell her not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, because of those things, you know, when I found Assure, you guys give out those little babies, maybe the size of a finger, that sort of thing. And I hold two of those little babies in my office, and they're with me today. And my grandchildren keeps asking me, "Dad, Papa, what are those for?" And I said, "I'll tell you later. I'll tell you later." Where if they listen to this broadcast now, they'll know.
Yeah,
it represents their uncles or aunts or whatever they would have been. They're in heaven right now.
Well, thank you so much for being transparent, and not to minimalize what you've gone through, but I think there are probably many other men that have gone through something very similar. Think about it, something we didn't talk about, something that, you know, wasn't stressed or life wasn't really brought to the forefront. So I think there are probably more men that have been a part of an abortion, and maybe they're where you are now as well, where they have some regrets or they want to make things right. And so I'm really grateful that you are able to share your story, because I think this might bring freedom to some others. So thank you for being on the show for that. From your perspective, how does abortion affect men both emotionally and spiritually?
Yeah, well, emotionally, if you're in my state right now and you realize the seriousness of it and you get a little educated about it and you realize the origins of it and these sorts of things, it's pretty upsetting when you realize how it evolved and what it's come to. And so it prompts me to want to do something about it, obviously. On a spiritual level, well, obviously for me, being a believer, being a Christian, and then I would say this, that God is all about life. He's the giver of life. Yeah. He's the redeemer of life. He's a sustainer of life. It's all about life for him.
Yeah.
And so there is no scenario that I can think of that we would ever want to do something like that. And so I would certainly hope that at least for believers, we would take it extremely seriously and be on the pro-life bandwagon.
Good. So do you agree with the Free Press article that that men feel excluded from the conversation on abortion and that men's pain around the abortion of their child is ignored?
You know, yes, because here's why. Is that the disproportion again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about the woman, and I certainly understand that. But it to the exclusion that we really think men don't care. And I can tell you, I can't be the only one that cares about this issue. And I certainly shouldn't be the only one that cares about this issue as a Black American. I can't be. And so there has to be some other men that think like me, and maybe they don't know how to get involved.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So if so, how can we encourage more men to speak out, and what should be done to support these men? So how do we get men to come to a point where you are and say, hey, this is something that happened in my past. I need to be healed first and foremost, but then I also need to work against it or work for life.
I think we need to adjust the narrative. And what I mean by that is this. It again, when you talk about pro-life, you only think about a woman. You only think about a woman's right to choose. You only think about a woman. And so that's all you hear. A man is never even mentioned, which would assume that we don't care. So I think even in programs like this, or even nationally, we need to change the narrative that says there are men that care. There are men that want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And there are these men who want to be involved have to be shown how to be involved. And there are certainly ways we can participate.
Yeah. So, Reggie, you're passionate about revealing the truth about abortion. What message do you want people, especially those in the church, to understand about this issue?
Yeah. You know what? Now, I'm going to say this, and I hope that people understand me. I do not believe that there is a black church and a white church. Okay. There's one church, and I get that. However, what's really shocking to me is that when you see the involvement, if you were to separate it from black and white, when you see the involvement, oh, the white church is heavily involved, mm-hmm. heavily involved. And the black church is lacking in this. So I think everything needs to start at the micro level. In other words, dads need to talk to their sons mm-hmm. at an early age. So that's the family aspect. And then pastors, particularly black pastors, need to talk about the very thing that they preach about, which is life. Mm-hmm. Christ coming to give us life. Well, we need to talk about what's happening yeah. to our community in that mother's womb. I think we really, really need to do that. So it starts with the family. We have to get it in the church, and then maybe it'll spread into the community.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think back to some of the conversations I've had with pastors, black pastors, and one of the things that I hear them say is that it's not that I'm not concerned about life, but there are so many other issues that I have to deal with in the church that one falls, you know, to the back burner, unfortunately. And I want to say, but if there's no life, there are no other issues that you have to deal with. And so that conversation, that's a whole nother radio program that we can jump into. But I would totally agree with you. We have to start talking about it in our families. I know I've had conversations with my girls early on to the point where I'm afraid of, not afraid, but very cautious about some things that they might say to, you know, their siblings or their friends, not siblings, but their friends when they're growing up. Because we are super open about a lot of things and most people are not. Particularly in the African-American community.
And by the way, it takes some courage.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with politics and all these sorts of things, if you're a black individual and you start talking about the abortion issue, you'll be surprised to find that both people are on the other side of what I'm thinking. Yeah. And then I might get ridiculed from them. So it takes some courage to say, hey, you know what? I am anti-abortion.
Yeah,
I am pro-life,
yeah.
unapologetically. And so it's, you would think that based upon the fact that I know certain things, and then I have to give them some grace because I've studied this issue.
Yeah.
I've studied it. And so the more you study it, the more you are appalled by it.
Yeah.
And so I give them grace, but you have to have some courage because they will not think like you.
Hi, this is Kyle with Assure Women's Center. Right now, your donation to support Assure's life-saving work can go even farther. Some donors have challenged us to raise $500,000, and if we do it, they will give us an additional $120,000. But we only receive the $120,000 if we raise $500,000 by June 13th. Last year, we served over 1,600 women, many at high risk for abortion. With your help, we can reach even more. Be part of this life-saving work. Go to firststeptolife.com/bot and give now. That's firststeptolife.com/bot. Thank you.
Now, changing directions a bit, I'd like to talk about your experience volunteering with Assure. Can you tell me how you heard about Assure and what about Assure Women's Center makes you want to get involved?
Okay, I think this is a little comical because I was giving money to a national organization, mm-hmm. a national pro-life organization. And then the thought came to my mind, well, there has to be some local organizations I can give to. Why am I giving to the national organization? So I'm searching and searching and searching and could not find anything. Indeed, I don't even recall how I stumbled on Assure. I don't even recall. But I remembered when I finally found out about Assure and I said, you know, this place is pretty hard to find. I couldn't give you guys my money. And so I was told, if I'm not mistaken, it's somewhat intentional.
Yeah.
And then I realized why it was intentional, because when I first volunteered, I said, I'm willing to do anything besides give money. They asked me to paint a room, and I hate painting. I despise
me
banking.
Me too.
And so I remember I said, well, can I pay for it to be painted? Asking that question, can I pay you guys to have a painter? And they said, no, Rachel, I'll tell you what, we have a bush. Can you cut down some bushes for us? And I remembered that, and I remember the reason why they wanted those bushes cut down, because it was obscuring the camera vision for a dumpster that someone caused a dumpster fire.
Yeah,
that's when it became real to me.
That's a while ago.
That's when it became real to me. And so, yeah, you know, I just really wanted to get involved. Why? Because you know what? You feel like you're getting involved with what God is doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying that when you find what God is doing, follow in, you know, follow suit, get involved. And
absolutely.
I think God is involved in this.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that you answered the call. We're glad that you searched us out and found us and understood why we were kind of under the radar. Can you share with our listeners some of the other ways you volunteered and served at Ashore?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, again, I did the Bush thing, but then there came a time when the Ashore Women's Center acquired a mobile unit. And for that, I did some training on the mobile unit.
Yeah.
I helped drive the unit, mobile unit. And in fact, some of the ladies who are driving the mobile unit now, I took them to a location where we had practiced driving the mobile unit. I've also taught some classes here at Ashore, and it'll been available to do those sorts of things, classes, mobile unit. And yeah, pretty much anything that Ashore Women's Center has asked me to do, if I have that skill set and able to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah, I remember those mobile unit training days. I think I was the only one that hit the curb, which is why I currently do not drop the mobile unit. So it was fun, but first, last, only. So now you've led parenting classes on topics like love, sex, and lasting relationships, balancing life's demands, and sacred parenting. How do you approach these topics in a way that resonates with your students?
Yeah, I think what I do with my life experiences, I try to convey that in my message to those folks, particularly letting them know that, hey, listen, I was in your shoes. I was the offender at one point, you know, and I became an advocate. And so I think the way I instruct or teach is just to be relevant to their situation, to their circumstances, because I have that experience, as I mentioned. But also make sure that the content is relevant. If you're going to give me a book, when the author, if we're going over that book, I'm going to take that message and, if you will, urbanize it. Mm-hmm. And I think it resonates with people.
Yeah.
I really do.
Mm. Yeah, I remember one of the young ladies that sat in your class said she doesn't care what you're teaching, she's going to be in your class. So we got many compliments on how well you taught the class and how relatable you were to those girls. And I like what you said, you urbanized it, because just like the Bible, if you can't tell me how to apply the Bible, then it's just words. And so you are able to take that material and show them how to apply it so that it leaps from the page to their lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. You bring a unique perspective as a male volunteer in a space that often has predominantly female participants. How do you think your presence impacts the parents who attend your classes?
Well, first, there's that male figure. In our society, and even in our community, quite frankly, males aren't existent. Lots of fatherless homes. And so I think it's important to have a male in front of the people who I'm speaking to, because in most cases, a male is not a good figure in their life or non-existent in their life. And so I think it helps them to at least get some reassurance that there are some good males out there, and there's some good men out there that can relate to their circumstances. But not only that, to give them hope that just because it's happened to them in the past that they had a bad experience with a male, there's still some good males out there.
Absolutely. So I mentioned a young lady that said, I don't care what the class is, but I want to learn from him. What does that mean to you to have that kind of impact? How does that make you feel at the end of the day?
I have to admit, hearing that comment, and I remember that comment was stated back when it was stated, it really motivated me. It really made me feel like, okay, I am relevant.
Yeah,
I'm relevant. And whatever technique God has given me to employ, is working. Mm-hmm. So it makes me feel great. I have to admit that makes I really, really good about that.
Yeah, good, good. Not that we look for attaboys, but that's looking at attaboys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are some of the biggest challenges you see facing the families that come to Assure? And how does education help them overcome these obstacles?
I absolutely think education is everything, everything. And I think that the education, I think, also should allow them to see the origin of an issue. I think if you find the origin of an issue and see how it evolved, oftentimes it didn't start off bad. Mm-hmm. Something didn't start off bad and it evolved to that. Or oftentimes it did start off bad and got worse. And so while we're teaching these classes, I think if people, we have to employ, I think, something that's going to say, well, this is how this issue started. This is how you got to where you are.
Yeah.
You just didn't come into this. Right. You came into a system that was a fast-moving train that was negative, and there's some positive aspects we can mm-hmm. provide to you, provided we can show you how it started and maybe how you can get better at it,
mm-hmm.
life.
So, Reggie, I've heard you say that people don't need to be converted. They just need to be given the truth. Why do you think this is so important to focus on truth rather than persuasion?
Love that question. Truth liberates, for one. And I can tell you, you can't even have deception without truth. You can't. And so what happens is this. What deception does is it uses the truth in order to promote its lie. If I can give this example, if someone came to you and told you nine truths, and as they're progressing along with their nine truths, you're really getting motivated, you're really getting drawn, and you're really saying, wow, this is great, and give you one lie, you don't focus on the one lie. You focus on the nine truth. Well, guess what? Now the next thing I'm going to tell you eight truths and two lies, seven truths and three lies. And now you're involved in this thing, and it all started with the truth they told in order to get to a lie. And so once that lie has resonated and gotten and been pervasive, you're stuck in a system. And so truth is the remedy for everything, but it has to be the right truth and consistent truth.
I hadn't thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. So how do you see the role of faith in addressing abortion and supporting families in need?
Yeah, well, the role of faith is paramount. Again, it all starts with life. And Jesus came to give life. Came to give it more abundantly. He is the author of life. He is a redeemer of life, which also says that no matter what circumstance you've gotten yourself into, it can be redeemed because it's all about life. And so the faith and the faith community really need to grasp hold of this issue, because as you had mentioned, what's the relevance of talking about anything else? Anything else when you haven't even started with life? You haven't started with life. So I think that the faith community really needs to get involved. And again, I'm really, really appreciative of the fact that though we are, when I say we, our community is lacking and can get better in this, we have another community, other communities that at least take it very seriously.
Absolutely. I know there's a lot of work to be done, but what do you think are some practical ways that churches and individuals mm-hmm. can get involved in sharing the truth and supporting life-affirming efforts?
Yeah, first, it takes some courage, I think. As we mentioned earlier, you have to have some courage as well as conviction mm-hmm. about what you're feeling. Yeah. And then once you've done that, I think as a parishioner or as a member of a church, go talk to your pastor. Mm-hmm. Get educated about the subject. And so that when you're talking to him, if you're going to be talking to particularly a fellow believer, I don't see how you can talk to them about this relevant issue and they would deny it and not mm-hmm. want to do something about it.
Absolutely. I always feel like those conversations, those one-on-one conversations are a good start. And like you said, just having being courageous and bold enough to just have a conversation. Maybe it's with your family member. Maybe it's with, your neighbor. It's that one-on-one. I would love that where there would be a clarion call and it just goes out and everybody just goes, oh, I get it. But it's probably not going to happen like that. It's going to happen in those small groups, those one-on-ones. And I think that's a good place for us to start. And like you said, certainly talking to a pastor, if there's some issues, I think if you feel like they're not being addressed at your church, maybe you should go to your pastor and ask, why are we not talking about this? Or how can we talk about it? Because truthfully, there are people that are sitting in our audience that have perhaps had an abortion, contemplating an abortion. And when we are quiet, it leaves them to suffer.
What a great point.
Yeah. If someone is listening today and is thinking about volunteering but isn't sure how they can help, what would you say to encourage them to take the first step?
If they're thinking about volunteering, there's something that prompted them to have even that thought. Mm-hmm. So focus really hard on that thought. If you're a believer, pray about it. I guarantee you God will lead you just like he led me to Assure. And you don't have to be a believer. You don't. I mean, obviously there are a lot of pro-life people who are not believers. But ask around. You're not going to find too many people who are like-minded like you. But you find that one person, you find a Reggie Johnson and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm glad you asked. I know just the place.
Yeah.
So ask questions, get educated and that sort of thing.
So, Reggie, as we wrap up, is there any final thought or encouragement you'd like to share with our listeners?
Get involved. Mm-hmm. Be strong in your convictions. Don't be afraid to be that one who is in the midst of the crowd that think differently, and don't be afraid to express it. Be that courageous person and get involved.
Good. Well, thank you so much for your commitment to life and for joining us today. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer at Assure, please email lifematters@assureomaha.com. Again, that's lifematters@assureomaha.com. You can also email us to learn more about our resources for anyone who is suffering from a past abortion or who is currently facing an unsupported pregnancy.
We want to thank you for joining us on Life Matters this week. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. Assure is helping women with unplanned pregnancies take the first step to life. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. Right now, your donation to support Assure's life-saving work can go even farther. Some donors have challenged us to raise $500,000, and if we do it, they will give us an additional $120,000. But we only receive the $120,000 if we raise $500,000 by June 13th. Last year, we served over 1,600 women, many at high risk for abortion. With your help, we can reach even more. Be part of this life-saving work. Go to firststeptolife.com/bot and give now. That's firststeptolife.com/bot.